Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn a lot. This is one of those days where I wish we had 3 hours. But I'm going to pack as much as I can in the next hour, beginning with looking at ginseng's specific environment and its phytochemistry, where it can go into the body and act as a functional herb. What do I mean? I mean that foods that are functional, for example, pomegranate. Pomegranate's able to increase nitric oxide, which increases the circulation, which helps your blood move through the arteries better in the veins. It also helps men who need that nitric oxide, very similar to what the, let's say, the erectile dysfunction medications give you, but this gives it to you without any side effects. So that's a functional food on many levels, helping your heart also and reducing inflammatory agents in your blood. But ginseng is one of those adaptogenic herbs, means that it helps your body adapt better to stressors of all types, chemical stressors, polluting stressors, psychological stressors. But according to Chang Chung University of Chinese Medicine, it does something else. It represses what is called autophagy to promote cervical cancer cell apoptosis during starvation, meaning it helps the body cause the cancer cells in the cervix to commit suicide. Cancer cells through autophagy-mediated recycling to meet the metabolic demands of growth and proliferation. So one of the ways that we can help a person who has, let's say, cervical cancer is to suggest one part of their overall protocol, and this is only one part, is to give them ginseng. All right? It makes a difference. This is a good study, and we publish all of our studies every day on PRN.fm so you can see the actual science involved in it. So the results of this study is that these attenuated cancer cell growth and induced apoptosis upon serum-free starvation. In effect, it caused the cancer cells to commit suicide. That's good. Now, another study from the Complutense University in Spain published an article in Experimental Gerontology that showed that your vitamins and minerals, your good antioxidants, improved older individuals above the age of 40's immune system. And boy, do we need something to improve our immune system today across the board. There is now lots of proof that vitamin C and vitamin E can make a big difference in helping your immune function. And that allows you to live a longer life and be less susceptible if you are infected. Mind you, most of the people who are around any contagion contact with that particular antigen won't become infected because of their immune system. For example, I've mentioned this before, but it's a good example. Think of it in an office where you have a lot of people working in the little cubes, but the air is the same that everyone's breathing. Everybody is breathing in the whatever's in the air. And as a result, if you had 100 people on the floor, maybe 10 people come down with a cold or a flu. Why not everybody? It's the state of their immune system, among many factors, including the amount of contact they had with a particular virus or bacteria. But the same is true of school children. I know one teacher, for example, in fact, I've lectured at the teacher's school out in Long Island several times, because she teaches her children how to be healthy. She worked with the parents of the children to make sure that they were not in any way offended by teaching healthy eating, and they supported her. So she's a vegan, so she began to bring in recipes, and she'd bring in dishes that she made, and people could sample them. And then there was a bug going around the school. A lot of other children were out sick. A lot of teachers got sick. None of her students did, nor did she. That's the immune system. So the more you do for the immune system, the more it works on your behalf to protect you, especially now when we need strong immune systems. So that's why your antioxidants work, especially vitamin C. Now, mind you, in this study, they're only using 200 milligrams of vitamin E and 500 milligrams of vitamin C per day for 3 months. And yet, even at those low doses, the functional aspects of these two types of white blood cells known as neutrophils and lymphocytes were assessed at the beginning of the supplementation and then at the end of the period of time of 90 days. And there was a huge difference. The neutrophil values known as adherence indexes improved in those taking vitamin E and vitamin C. Now, I start people at 800 units of vitamin E in mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols and start people with 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C and go up from there. So just imagine if you're taking larger amounts, how much benefit that is to your lymphocytes. And by the way, when lymphocytes function were evaluated, it was improved in association with vitamin supplementation compared to the pretreatment levels. So it really made a difference. And that releases the natural killer cell activity. And the older you get, the less of those you have. And the natural killer cells in the body is what destroys cancer cells. So something that simple makes a big difference. And I mentioned yesterday I would talk a bit about quercetin today. Quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. And some people are taking, but they don't always know why. Well, you can find it in fruits and vegetables, specifically in apples, apple skins, and in onions. And that's why I always suggest to have 2 apples to 3 apples a day. And if you can't eat them, you can certainly juice them. But then you want the skin, and you won't get the benefit of the skin if you juice them, only a small percentage. So you peel the apple, throw it in a blender, and you can put your other nutrients in there at the same time, like your plant-based protein powder and your different vegetable and berry juices all together. And you blend it up, and you drink it down. Then you're getting a lot of quercetin. And, of course, we want to try to get it as much as possible from natural sources, but then we realize for anti-aging and for antiviral activity, and by the way, quercetin is strongly antiviral. In fact, I was out at Linus Pauling's Institute. There was a Dr. Jirwala, and just using quercetin by itself and vitamin C by itself, he was able to kill all of the HIV virus in the Petri dishes using those supplements. Now, then I suggest to him, use them together. I even told Linus Pauling, it's the synergy of the two. You take half the amount of quercetin you do a vitamin C, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, 500 milligrams of quercetin. But it also works in other ways. For example, if you take a lot of the flavanols, and that's what you're going to get from berries, and the flavones, such as quercetin, they can lower the risk of cardiovascular disease. It protects you from heart attacks and strokes and other heart problems. And it has a really good effect, positive effect, on your mitochondria. Mito, M-I-T-O, chondria, C-H-O-N-D-R-I-A. That's your little energy factories in the cell. So we've seen the proof constantly with thousands of studies on quercetin's mitochondria boost, meaning when you take mitochondria, it can help you exercise longer. It can help you in a gym. It can help you on the road on a bike. It can help you because it's helping your muscles. And that's important. There's a human trial of just taking 500 milligrams of quercetin versus a placebo for 7 days, and they found that there was a 13.2% reduction in fatigue in those taking it with quercetin. That's a big difference. That's substantial. But what I really like about quercetin is the same thing I like about beets and rhubarb, and of course, pomegranate, and that is plaque regression. Quercetin has been shown to benefit people to counteract atherosclerosis. That's the gradual blockage of blood flow through the arteries. Atherosclerosis plaques are a major cause of heart attack and stroke, two of the top killers of Americans. And in this study, it was shown that it helped stop that process. there was plaque regression, and is likely driven by recently discovered property of quercetin. Scientists found that quercetin triggers reverse cholesterol transport, which is the removal of cholesterol from the artery wall by HDL for transport to the liver for safe disposal. And quercetin has additional benefits for the endothelial cells. That's the lining, the blood vessels that normally control blood flow and pressure. So quercetin restores normal production of the relaxation signaling molecule nitric oxide and has been shown to produce relaxation of major arteries to promote improved blood flow. That could help you if you have high blood pressure. That's important. So it does a lot of good things. It reduces abnormal heart rhythms in patients with ischemic heart disease. It reduces the incidence of abnormal aortic aneurysms in animal models, and it helps to slow platelet aggregation, which can lead to blood clots that produce heart attacks and strokes. Again, these are good things, and it's a potent neuroprotection nutrient. It helps to lessen the brain cells against excitotoxicity, the damage done by repeated excitatory electrical impulses observed in Alzheimer's and other neurodegenerative diseases. It acts through an antioxidant mechanism, and it can reduce toxicity of the dangerous and abnormal amyloid beta proteins that accumulate in the brain. And it helps with obesity, it helps with diabetes substantially. So just some things that I wanted to share with you. Remember, onions and apples, and raw onion a day keeps a stroke away. Apples a day help everything in the body, by the way. And quercetin boosts cardiovascular function, muscular endurance and performance, protects against loss of brain cells, corrects blood glucose and lipid abnormalities in metabolic syndrome, and so it also protects against cancer. It fights the mitochondrial threats to bone and joint health. So just a little longer on that than normal, but I want you to know it's something you should be taking. Also, carnitine, C-A-R-N-I-T-I-N-E, it's associated with improved metabolic syndrome. And this is from Sun Shin's Women University in South Korea. And this was a placebo-controlled trial published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients, and it found improvement in factors that characterize metabolic syndrome among men and women given L-carnitine supplementation. But also, L-carnitine helps people who have irregular heartbeat, including AFib. And we know that metabolic syndrome is determined by the presence of three or more factors that include high blood pressure, elevated fasting triglycerides, low levels of high-density lipoprotein, the HDLs, your overall increase in abdominal circumference, meaning do you have fat on the belly or thighs, and your fasting blood. We're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to a short video of Professor Mushu Kaku talking about what is here now. I told you that they have the capacity to read your brain. Well, they have for the last 2 years. But they're going to be selling everyone, especially the millennials and younger people, that why hassle? Why go to school? Wait till you hear what we are now looking at. A contact lens that you put it in and you blink, and anything you need, you suddenly have in a class. So you're going to hear him say, well, then what is the purpose of teaching anyone anything or expecting to do anything when all they have to do is blink and suddenly an answer's there? It's really concerning me. Why? Because with the woke generation, most of those are millennials, younger millennials, and people growing up in a bubble disassociated with the real world, they're not looking at the consequences of a lack of scholarship, a lack of knowing the larger picture, a lack of knowing how things are integrated and interrelated in our society. And so the information they're getting is superficial. The type of books they're reading are superficial. The amount of reading they do is just limited. And so what does that portend for the future of really dumbed down, highly reactive, emotionally hypersensitive generation taking power, taking control? Well, what's that going to mean for the rest of us? So they'll sell the benefits of the Internet of All Things, and 5G is what's going to connect it. So see how they're tying in 5G, which we don't need at all. We could do the same thing without 5G just by using our existing hardwired systems, but they don't want that. They want to know everything about you and have complete control over you. In that regard, after we play this Michio Kaku piece, and Richard Gale's coming on to share the latest on the one, well, not the one, one of the medications, non-toxic, doesn't have the side effects of the mainstream drugs, but it can stop the COVID virus. And he's got the peer review studies to prove it. You've already heard, and I'm not going to play again, the under oath in the Senate medical doctor, professor of medicine, who is leading the charge on this. But why isn't Anthony Fauci promoting this? Why isn't either the old White House of Trump or the new one coming in Biden saying, yes, let's first build up our immune system naturally. Secondly, let's get good science in there, not the kind of fraudulent science we've been exposed to. And thirdly, if we have an inexpensive medication that would cost someone about $50, why wouldn't we use it if it works? Well, that shows you how you've been gained. But I'm going to do a couple commentaries, one by John Whitehead that gets into this issue in some depth, and then also one on from James Hershen from Newsmax. Huxley Still Has It Right is the title of his article, and John Whitehead, What to Expect in 2021, Madness, Mayhem, Manipulation, and More Tyranny. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Years. Computer chips will cost as little as a penny. That's cheaper than garbage, cheaper than scrap paper. So computer chips will be everywhere and nowhere, including our contact lenses. So when we put on our contact lenses and blink, we will go online. And who were the first people to buy internet contact lenses? College students taking final examinations. This means that my students will blink, and they will not have to memorize all the things I've been talking about. This is going to revolutionize education, because we cannot force students to memorize things that they can simply blink and get. And then if you feel sick, you will blink and see RoboDoc. RoboDoc is artificially intelligent, talks to you in plain English or Russian or whatever, speaks any language, accesses the entire internet for sound medical advice, almost for free. This is going to revolutionize the medical establishment. We'll still have doctors, but doctors will use RoboDoc as an aid. And if you're in a car accident in a foreign country, you don't speak the language, you'll talk to your wristwatch and talk to RoboLawyer. RoboLawyer understands the law in any country, in any language. In fact, I personally believe that artificial intelligence, the robotics industry, will eventually become bigger than the automobile industry of today, because your automobile will become a robot. You will talk to it. You will argue with it. You'll have discussions with your car about the best route to take. And when you want to park the car, you simply tell your car, park yourself. And the car parks itself. This is going to revolutionize urban economics when you don't have to worry about parking anymore. And then the next organ to be digitized is the brain. You may not know this, but 2 years ago, scientists were able to upload the first memories. Memories can now be uploaded and downloaded. This makes possible BrainNet. BrainNet could be the next step in the evolution of the internet. Instead of zeros and ones, instead of text, you'll put emotions, feelings, sensations, memories. Teenagers will go crazy. Teenagers put happy faces at the end of every sentence. Why bother to do that when you can put the emotion of your first dance, your first kiss, your first whatever, right there on the internet? And so in the future, when you walk into a room, you will mentally command the internet. You'll take dictation mentally. You'll turn things on, turn things off, communicate with other people. People will think of you as a wizard of some sort, mentally communicating with everything around you. That's BrainNet. And then biotech is being digitized now. We can create a human body shop. We can create from your own cells, so there's no rejection mechanism. We can create skin, bone, cartilage, noses, ears, blood vessels, heart valves, bladders, complete windpipes can be grown in the laboratory. The next organ to be grown, by the way, is the liver. So for all you alcoholics in the audience, take heart. We may be able to grow your next liver. So even the economy is now being digitized into something I call perfect capitalism. You see, capitalism is based on supply and demand. But you don't know who's cheating you when you buy something. You don't know what the profit margin is. In the future, your contact lens will scan everything in a store, tell you who's cheating you, tell you who has the best product, what is the profit margin on every single thing that you can scan with your contact lens. And so capitalism becomes perfect. Perfect supply and demand. This means that there are winners and losers. The losers will be middlemen. Because why did Amazon become so big? Why did Airbnb? Why did Uber become so quickly so large? Because they digitized the middlemen. So I tell my friends, if you want to become a billionaire, take an industry. Take any industry. Write down all the places where there's friction, where there is middlemen, where there's obstruction, where there's frustration. List all the places in any industry, digitize it, and you too could become another Amazon founder.
Thank you, Professor. In good futurism, that is a future with both inspires and terrifies. So thank you.
Well, that is terrifying because of how easy it is to convince the American public that what you're doing in their best interest. They can sugarcoat anything. Look at the fact that not a single media in the United States nor any of the officials in our government have taken issue with 5G. It's all a panacea. And so that's what's connecting all these technologies together. So you will have no privacy. By the way, as an aside, oppose Bill A416. Call today. Because the Senate in New York State is moving on this. It appears the New York State Assembly will vote on Bill A416 today. Why should you oppose this? Because it would allow the governor and health authorities to detain and forcibly vaccinate New Yorkers without normal due process. Unless you don't mind being forcibly detained and vaccinated. If you don't mind that, then good, because it's happening. It's a reality. I warned you about this. Now they're going to make it mandatory. So we're urging everyone to call your state assembly member and state senator today and leave them a voicemail. Call them, leave messages. Let them know you oppose Bill A416 and demand they oppose it as well. If you don't know your assembly member or state senator, you can find them using the link call the state capital. We don't want this, all right? At least I don't want it. You have Bill A416. Now, so I got the bill. I read it. My God, it reads like something out of Nazi Germany in the roundups. They will have absolute control over anything, where they take you, where they warehouse you, how they can forcibly detain you, how you have no rights. If they deem at any level that you represent some threat, if you have or don't have the virus, it's their suspicion. And so we've got to fight back, because if you don't fight back, you won't have a chance to fight back. Now, I'm not a New York resident, but for those of you who are and you don't want to be vaccinated, you're out of luck. If this passes, you will be vaccinated. You will be arrested. In effect, you'll be arrested. They can do anything they want. It's very similar to Barack Obama. You know, the guy who won the Nobel Peace Prize, then went out within weeks and started bombing 7 different countries, and then passed the notorious National Defense Authorization Act that people got arrested in front of the White House. Mainly Chris Hedges was there in a lawsuit. They lost the lawsuit, but that meant that the President of the United States had the absolute legal right to arrest anyone for any reason, deny you any legal representation, deny you any information on why you were arrested, who you were being challenged by. You had no right to witnesses. In other words, all due process gone. They could kill you. Actually, they could kill you. It's in the damn law. And of course, Joe Biden and all the other dancing clowns in that administration, they supported this. Not once has anyone challenged him or Kamala Harris on their support of the National Defense Authorization Act, the Homeland Security Act, and all the other draconian police state mindset. And that's what you're going to be getting now in really a concentrated way. This is from James Harshen from Newsmax. Quote, "The dystopian novel Brave New World was written in 1931 by visionary Aldous Huxley. In his book, the author describes what life is like in a society that is under complete domination of a group of hardened autocrats. It's a tyrannical tale with a twist, however. Members of this society are kept in a state of perpetual bliss, despite having every aspect of their lives from birth to death controlled by a power-drunk ruling class. It's a society in which power is concentrated in the hands of a few. Communication of information is meticulously managed, and endless distractions prevent people from thinking, reasoning, and imagining. A drug is routinely dispensed to the masses, called soma, so as to facilitate the exile of perceptible sensations of pain, stress, or anxiety. Unhappiness is avoided through excess indulgences, materialism, sexual promiscuity, and altered states of mind. A synthetic religion substitutes for authentic faith. Theology is God, and as such is worshipped and adored. Preconditioned slaves delight in their own enslavement. Enduring human connections are reflexively thought as of repulsive. The optimum relationship status is summed up in 7 short words of the state maxim. Everyone belongs to everyone else." Okay. So, back to me. This is an ultra-totalitarian state that we've been in, but it's a dress rehearsal for what's going to happen starting this month. You're not going to have any rights by the end of this year unless they are in line with Klaus Schwab, the founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, and the Great Reset promoters, and these are the people in power. So they got you on 2 levels. They got you in a state of acute anxiety. They manufacture madness. They isolate and separate anyone who has an original thought. They deplatform people. They shame people. The mainstream media are part of it. Just to give you one simple example of this, and this just happened. Many of you wrote me and said, "Gee whiz, did you read how the New York Times allowed, I think it was RFK's sister, to trash him in the major feature?" Yeah, I read it. Now, Robert F. Kennedy wrote a rebuttal. And here's what he found. The New York Times declined to print his rebuttal to defamatory op-ed on COVID vaccines. So Dr. Craig Meltzer, although the piece contained factual errors and defamatory accusations, the Times declined to publish his letter to the editor correcting those false claims. Quote, this is from RFK Jr. "The right of reply, the opportunity to defend oneself against public criticism in the same venue where that criticism was published, is a constitutional right in some European countries and in Brazil. The BBC's editorial guidelines state, quote, when our output makes allegations of wrongdoing, inequity, or incompetence, or lays out a strong and damaging critique of an individual or institution, that the presumption is that those criticized should be given the right of reply, that is, given a fair opportunity to respond to the allegations," end quote. "Even where there is no legal right, respected journalistic outlets, including the New York Times, have traditionally regarded it as their moral, ethical, and professional obligation to publish the replies of people who have been criticized in their pages. The Times, which claims to encourage the expression of a diversity of views on its letters page, formally extended this courtesy automatically to public figures who suffered criticism in its pages. But the paper draws the line at anyone who questions orthodoxies promoted by the ascending medical cartel. The practice of reporting only facts and opinions that comply with official narratives has long been in the electronic media outlets that are dependent on pharma advertising revenue. On Saturday, my niece, it was his niece, not his sister, published an error-filled and defamatory article about me on the Times editorial page. I immediately submitted the thoroughly sourced letter below. And then he goes into all the things that she said that were wrong. And the Times said, no, we're not going to publish it. So the entire media has been compromised and corrupted. All of the government agencies are compromised and corrupted, especially the FDA, the USDA, and the CDC, totally corrupt, totally controlled by special interest groups. The White House, it doesn't matter who's in office, and their cabinets, all corrupted in alliance with the deep state. So that's what we're not being told, and that's what the average person wouldn't know. Just letting you know that that's what's happening. So that's why we go out of our way to try to bring on issues or individuals that will tell you the truth. Let's go over to Richard Gale now, because he's got some truths that you should know. And it's about ivermectin, one of the drugs that is being used but not promoted by Anthony Fauci, not promoted by the AMA or any of our major media or any of our major medical groups. And yet it works better than anything in their arsenal. It would have saved at least half, if not more, of all the people who have died in the United States and around the world if they had had access to this inexpensive and principally non-toxic drug. Richard, take it from there and show us the proof.
Yeah, good afternoon, Gary. ivermectin, this is a drug that has been around. It was created in the 1970s. It was first used for veterinarian medicine, approved in 1981, and then just a few years shortly thereafter, it was approved for some conditions for humans. It was derived and developed by a Japanese scientist, Satoshi Amura from Kitasato University. It was based on an organism that he discovered in Japanese soil, and this is a first-class scientist. He's not a slouch. He's a member of the U.S. National Academy of Science and Russian Academy of Science, German Academy of Science, the Royal Society of first-class scientists, first-class researcher. And but in veterinarian medicine, this drug has been touted as a wonder drug, which is very rare. There are very few drugs we could say are wonder drugs, so penicillin perhaps, or certainly, and aspirin. And because of its wide versatility, it has very strong anti-parasite properties, antibacterial, antiviral, and even anti-cancer. And it has been, there are approximately 9,000 publications in PubMed showing its benefits. It is particularly past June, there was a complete review of ivermectin in the Journal of Antibiotics, and it showing its very strong antiviral properties for RNA viruses, which COVID is SARS-CoV-2. This is an RNA virus. And so is Zika, yellow fever, West Nile, the avian flu, HIV. These are all RNA viruses. And it's also very effective against DNA viruses, herpes, polyomavirus, circovirus. On a daily basis, there are approximately 1 million doses administered of ivermectin throughout the world, but this is primarily in developing countries. It's widely used throughout Africa and in Southeast Asia and Indonesia, where you have poorer populations because it's a very inexpensive drug, a very simple, easy drug to manufacture. I mean, just to compare ivermectin, here in this country, it costs about $20 to $30 a prescription, as opposed to remdesivir, Gilead's drug that is being touted by Anthony Fauci and the NIH and CDC, that's $3,100 a prescription, despite the fact that this drug has primarily been funded by taxpayer dollars through the NIH to be able to develop it. But when we look at the research concerning ivermectin against COVID, so of course it hasn't been studied. You know, COVID's only been around now for the past year, so there aren't that many studies for it yet. But it shows 100%. Every study shows 100% efficacy, benefits for reducing mortality. There are 44 studies now on ivermectin against COVID. Some are a little shabby because they enrolled only a small number of participants, but there are other studies that are more rigorous. For early treatment, it has 87% efficacy. Being used as a prophylactic for pre-exposure, which would be excellent for people who are in public spheres, especially healthcare workers, has a 91% efficacy. And there are a couple studies that even showing post-exposure prophylactic. So, you know, you may be asymptomatic or you've been in contact with somebody who was positive for COVID, so you can treat use as a prophylactic, and it has a 90% efficacy in that respect. So if you look and gather and collect all these 44 studies, which include about 7,000 patients total, it shows overall an 89% improvement, meaning that there's a reduction in mortality, less likelihood for hospitalization, and a reduced amount of time spent in the hospital. There has been this real concerted effort, however, to denigrate ivermectin. There was a recent Australian study of 704 patients who were in critical condition. So there seems to be a real obstacle to study ivermectin with severely ill patients, okay? Which is why so far it's been mostly being recommended as a prophylactic for early treatment. But this Australian study of 704 patients noted a substantial reduction in mortality and length of stay in hospital and people being able to be discharged. But for some unknown reason, undisclosed reason at this time, the authors were forced to withdraw the study for publication. So there are other more developing countries are studying ivermectin much more thoroughly than the developed
countries. So, again, here's the issue, and I'd like people in the audience who have an opportunity right now to call in and give their point of view. Here we have a drug that is non-toxic, inexpensive, been around a long time, been used on, I was told, 4.3 million people throughout its long history, and has been able to show that if you're a first-line worker, nurse or doctor, this is what you need. If you're a person coming down with some symptoms, absolutely what you need. And if you're sick in a hospital, it still helps. And yet it's being attacked, just like hydroxychloroquine. Now, Richard and I have written several articles showing hydroxychloroquine's efficacy, and yet it's attacked. Now we have the British Medical Journal and an associate editor coming out and just surprised me. In fact, when I read it, I called Richard. I said, Richard, can you believe that the British Medical Journal is actually attacking Big Pharma and the governments for corrupting the coronavirus pandemic and profiting off of it? But no punches were pulled on this commentary. And I read it to the audience some time ago. In any case, so we're not allowing anyone in the public to be told what they could do at home to build up their immune system, which is your really major defense. We're not allowing the public to know these medications approved by the FDA, and this is different use, but it's still approved, to be used. And we have lots of people who've used it, lots of doctors in clinical practice use it. We had a man go before Congress, a highly respected physician, and said that those of us in this panel who are here today to testify, we've published more between us, I think four or five doctors and scientists, than anyone you're going to bring up here. Thousands of articles, And these are mainstream Orthodox doctors, pro-vaccine doctors, and yet they came up supporting ivermectin and condemning the attacks against it. You just don't see that, and we're seeing that. So why is it, do you believe, I'm asking the general audience, that we're not allowed to know the truth about this, these drugs and natural approaches that would prevent us from needing a vaccine, save lives by the hundreds of thousands? 888-874-4888 is our number. 888-874-4888. And Richard, before we go to a break, I'm going to read you an email that came from one of our listeners, and I want you to respond to it. This is from a person named Valerie, and hi. Please forward this message to Gary. I appreciate your response to my previous message. It's scary how much we agree upon. By the way, I found you through Len Saputo, who has been a friend of mine, become a friend of mine. My question, my daughter lives in Shanghai. She works for and gives the company. Her stores were closed for a month, reopened part-time after 4 weeks. They were not wearing masks after 2 months in a city of 21 million people. You mentioned the most recent study out of China saying asymptomatic spread. But what was most interesting, they had 3,000 asymptomatic tests positive. They did further tests and found that none of them had COVID. Also, early on, they relied upon temperature, taken every three blocks. If you were over 99 degrees, you were sent directly to a hospital for a test. They did not rely upon tests. They relied upon symptoms, your thoughts. I'd like you to address why China has no lockdowns, and we do. My own thought is that they have only focused on symptomatic patients. Previous studies had also shown no asymptomatic spread. I believe we could contain the spread if we focused all of our attention on the sick and those with symptoms, not those who test falsely positive. Maybe a simplistic answer, but I cannot explain how she does not wear a mask and can travel to many places. Also of interest, England is starting to shut down sites who disagree with the lockdown narrative. I've been following Ivor Cummings from Ireland, who had been presenting great data and charts on the COVID epidemic. You will disagree with him on diets. He's a keto proponent, but excellent work on our current situation. Love your show. Finding someone who thinks like I do has been such a relief. Just watched AIDS, Inc., and you were dead on. Keep spreading the truth. Thanks, Valerie. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Richard Gale will address some of these issues because these are needing to be addressed not by Anthony Fauci, not by people in power, certainly not by Big Pharma. Oh, and by the way, yesterday we read the latest edition of the British Medical Journal where Peter Doshi takes issue with the 95% effective answers. Quote from the British Medical Journal, Peter Doshi, Pfizer and Moderna's 95% effective vaccines, we need more details and raw data. Then in the article, he goes down and he examines their data, and based on the tiny, tiny number of people that were actually tested, he's suggesting here that the efficacy rate could be as low as 29%, 29%, not 95% when you factor in the way that they calculated their figures. So what if the New York Times says Moderna and Pfizer's vaccine, 29% effective? And also, he was the one who said, and Richard voiced this yesterday, that they never proved, nor was it intended to prove, that by taking the vaccine, you would prevent from getting COVID or spreading it to others. And yet that's the main reason most people would take the vaccine. Oh, if I take the vaccine, I'm not going to get COVID. Not true. Not true. That is an absolute lie. So we have to understand that we're not going to be prevented from getting the virus because they have no evidence of that, or spreading it to other people, or going to a hospital, being sick and dying. Well, those would be the reasons you want to get a vaccine. Anyhow, we're going to come back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're addressing some important issues today, and I just want to take a moment here to do a break so we can raise a little money for this station. We have together today selected Power Berry Blast, and with it, 7 Steps to Perfect Health DVD documentary. You save $44.99 on this, but the question is, why should you be interested in these 2 items? Well, first of all, just take a look at what you're getting when you're getting Power Berry Blast. You're getting blueberries, raspberries, beets, bananas. You're getting rice bran, cranberries, blackberry juice, bilberries, black currant juice, aronia extract, guava, quercetin, and quercetin dihydrate, 95%, camu, raspberry juice, elderberry juice, noni juice, cherry juice, pineapple juice, goji juice, strawberry juice, acai, and grape seed extract at 95%, all in one delicious bottle. All right, it's a big bottle too. So that's what you're getting. And then with the documentary, 7 Steps to Perfect Health, just listen to these. Step 1, how to identify and eliminate risk factors. Step 2, cleansing and detoxifying. Step 3, rejuvenation. Step 4, de-stressing. Step 5, removing toxins from our home and work environment. Step 6, exercising. Step 7, no more excuses. How we can actualize and have the courage to change. So these are powerful lessons that we need at this time more than ever. So I'm going to give you the number to call to get your Power Berry Blast and your 7 Steps to Perfect Health. And just give a call. And here is your order number, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or you can call Neil at the Vitamin Closet in our office at 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. Or for Diane and Sandy, call 877-627-5065. Richard, would you address some of the concerns, legitimate concerns, of this listener, Valerie?
Yes. I think what she's suggesting is, and trying to state concerning the Shanghai and what's happening in China is completely accurate. Unless somebody's shown symptoms, why should we be? What's the rationale for being deeply concerned about any pathogenic virus that we may be carrying? Because we're all carrying all kinds of viruses every day, and we are being exposed to all kinds of different viruses every day as well. I mean, this very moment, now that we're entering flu season, I may have been in contact with flu, but it doesn't necessarily mean I'm showing symptoms. But this is a ongoing experience we've had throughout our lives. So unless somebody's really showing symptoms, which would indicate a couple things. One, that our immune systems are weak and we're not really able to ward off the virus. Or two, that for some reason that virus has been able to multiply more rapidly in our bodies or our mucosal lining. Thereby we could infect someone else more if we have a higher titer or higher levels of the virus. So it makes perfect sense, because the Chinese and other countries are able to carry on with their normal lives, and schools are resuming. When we look at just the effects on the mental stress and adverse effects of mental conditions occurring in the U.S. and the U.K. in particular, or Australia, Canada now. We have to look at the cost benefit risk ratios in this, and in terms of cost, we're headed for a horrible situation down the road in the future if so many of the children. Students are suffering from mental disorders, and suicide rates have gone off the roof, as have opioid use and overdoses from opioids and other drugs. So we're not addressing any of these issues, obviously.
Well, let me share this.
Is just being pushed under the rug.
If they want to do a viral load for the specific virus, that's legitimate because it works this way. And anyone who has a background in biology or microbiology would know this. We all carry, as Richard said, many different types of viruses. But that doesn't mean that we're going to manifest symptoms of the virus. You have to have a viral load, meaning you have to have so many viruses. This is part of the Koch's postulate. You have to have enough of a virus in your blood or your body in order to manifest the symptoms of a condition. Now, yes, you can have the condition, but your immune system is keeping it in check, and it's at low level now, especially when we have a completely discredited PCR test, and it's even the FDA had to come out this week and acknowledge on Monday that there's a lot of false information coming out about the test, and we promoted a small clip that someone took off our website. We didn't get credit for it, and it's gone viral worldwide. It means people have watched it, where Dr. Kerry Mullis, who invented the PCR and won the Nobel Prize in 1993 in chemistry for it, said don't use the PCR as a diagnostic medium. It's not for diagnosing. It can't differentiate the new COVID-19 from an earlier COVID. And also, it's the amplifications. And it was shown in Germany that the people who won the patent there for a PCR test had it at 40 replications, meaning you had to keep blowing it up and blowing it up and blowing it up until you saw enough of the actual virus to say, ah, there's a virus here. But even Anthony Fauci, as well as most of the scientists in the world, said above even 25 to 30, and certainly the highest would be 35, anything beyond that, it's dead debris. It's not going to hurt you. But you go in and you go to get a swab, and it's going to show maybe they did 40 replications. It's going to show positive. Does that mean you're sick? You're a case? You need to go to the doctor? You need to be put on meds? No, it does not mean that. It means you simply have a positive. The doctor doesn't know anything more. The government statistics simply label it as a case in the New York Times in the most merciless and absolutely draconian editorial construct. Will then say these are cases, but they're not cases. They're simply people who had a positive reading, but you don't have the knowledge, nor does the doctor, nor the nurse, nor the patient. How many cycles did you have to amplify that virus before you actually saw enough of the damn thing to say, because there wasn't enough there above 30 or 35 in order to make me sick or anyone else sick? And it's not even specific for this virus. So at every level, world science has failed us. Anthony Fauci, in my opinion, should be challenged on this and will be. You'll hear a segment tomorrow by the team of lawyers who intend to sue the people at Dresden and others in Germany for doing this. We have destroyed the world economy for a lie. Yes, the virus is real, and yes, it's killed people, but the flu every year kills people. And why is it we have no flu statistics this year? And why is it that heart deaths are down, cancer deaths are down, but overall deaths are the same. And that's what we're not being told. Now, this woman mentioned this gentleman from Ireland who sends out these meticulous reports. I'm sure you've seen him, Richard. In fact, we got to get him on the show. These are accurate reports. He's using only government reports showing that for the last 5 years, and he started by looking in Ireland, the actual death rate is the same. And Sweden saw the same. Other countries saw the same. Well, if we had this virus killing everybody, you would see a spike above and beyond what would be normal in a year. But we haven't. And a lot of people have seen this. In fact, a Nobel Prize professor at Stanford and another professor at Stanford both did the math, came up with the same calculations. So what you should be asked is, what are the death rates where there is no other comorbidity? That tells you how lethal something is. Because if this virus were able to kill people at all age groups in large numbers, as what we're being told, and they had no other diseases, then you've got a really bad virus, and you should all be very concerned. That's exactly the opposite of what we're seeing. Your final thoughts on this, Richard?
Yeah, I'm looking at I'm looking at a study published in the Journal of Infectious Diseases, done out of Germany back in 2004. Looking at using PCR, looking at the COVID, at that time, they were just looking at coronaviruses in general and their association, because they were finding in upper respiratory diseases. But to hear this adds another caveat into just not only the inaccuracy of the PCR because of all the false positives, but also the false identification of the strain. This just came to my mind this is very second, and based on this study, because the majority of coronaviruses don't pose any risk or real danger. Sniffles, common cold, silver, take a lot of vitamin C, you're fine.
Yeah, and vitamin D. Thank you, Richard.
Right.
By the way, final comment for everyone. I want to thank James Juergen for sending me over just now the bill phone number. Again, everyone, listen up. The Governor Cuomo is coming to forcibly vaccinate you. He wants the full power to do this. And this bill, I read the bill. It will give him all the power and power. So those of you who tend not to do something, you just kind of become apathetic or say, well, it can't come to that. Remember how many times in history people believed that it can't come to that, and it did? Bill A416 is a draconian, terrible bill. It's now in the New York State Assembly. You must call now and say no to this bill. We oppose it. Here's the number. Write this number down. I'm just, and James says, quote, unless you like your slide into nazification as a state, call 518-455-4100. 518-455-4100. My suggestion, start looking for a better state to live in. New York has had its day, and it's not coming back. It's going to get a lot worse. I'll deal with that on the next show. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.